Good morning and welcome again to this service. I was originally scheduled to have this devotion several weeks ago, actually, and then due to some miscommunications and last-minute stuff, it ended up getting pushed back a few weeks. But at that time, we had been studying about the Anabaptists' persecution in Europe and some of the incredible pain and suffering they endured for the sake of their beliefs. So that in connection with a book that I was reading at the time, The Gift of Pain here by Dr. Paul Brandt and Philip Yancey, inspired me to talk about pain this morning. So that's what I'm going to talk about this morning, even though I planned it several weeks ago. So this book is a, for those of you who don't know, it's a story about a missionary doctor in India and some of the incredible stories he has from working with leprosy patients there. But on to pain. I've had a bit of a fascination with pain for a long time, and while I don't enjoy it in any sort of masochistic way, it did lead to me experimenting with some things, like getting stung by insects, just to see how badly it actually hurts. But like most of you, for the most part, I think about pain as a bad thing, something that we try to avoid. So on a shallow level, like if I stub my toe, or if I get a blister, I find that very painful, and I resent the fact often that it limits my abilities. And on a bigger scale, like mom's hip pain, it can be really debilitating, actually, and be kind of painful to watch. However, I do want us to change our perspective on pain just a little bit this morning. So, like I said, in this book, The Gift of Pain, Dr. Brand tells a lot of stories from his long career of treating leprosy patients, and I'd like to read a short excerpt to kind of set the stage here at the beginning. So this is a continuation of a story he was telling about a leprosy patient that they had been treating there. So just beginning, breaking in here just for the sake of time. But Sadan, the gentle young man who had slept in our veranda, exemplified this pattern. We had good success with his hands, and after a few months of surgery and recuperation, he landed a job as a clerk or a typist. But nothing we tried seemed to help his feet. He had come to Vellore as a last resort after several doctors had advised amputation of both legs beneath the knee. His feet had been shortened by almost half, and an angry red ulcer persisted on the ball of each rounded, toeless foot. We experimented with ointments, magnesium sulfate, penicillin cream, and any other treatment that might help clear up the ulcers, but they only seemed to get worse. This frustrating cycle went on for months. Several times, Sadan asked us to stop wasting time on his feet. "Go ahead and amputate them, as the other doctors recommended," he said. I could not do it, nor could I find a solution to his foot sores, however. It mystified me that surgical wounds on his hands healed on schedule, while foot ulcers on the very same patient did not. Was bad flesh the explanation? Sadan felt no pain from the foot ulcers, and he never complained. One day, I changed his dressings for at least the 10th time. I could hardly bear to meet him and remove his socks. I had come to love Sadan, and I knew he loved me and clung to me as his last hope. It broke my heart that day to tell him that the other doctors were probably right. We might have to amputate because we simply could not stop the spread of infection. Sadan received the news with sad resignation. I put my arm around him and ushered him down the hospital corridor to the door, trying to think of some word to encourage him. I had none to offer. I fully shared his sense of despair. Instead of returning to my examining room, I stood and watched Sadan walk down the steps, cross the sidewalk, and head down the road. His head and shoulders sagged in a posture of defeat. Then, for the first time, I noticed something. He had no limp. I had just spent half an hour cleaning out a grossly abscessed wound on the ball of his foot, and he was putting his full weight on the exact spot we had so carefully treated. No wonder the wound never healed. How could I have missed it before now? Gentian violet, penicillin, and every other drug stood no chance of helping Sadan as long as he, quite unintentionally and as a result of his lack of pain, kept the tissue in a continual state of trauma. At last, I had found the culprit responsible for the non-healing wound, the patient himself. So, in Sadan's story, a man afflicted by leprosy, the problem wasn't pain. It was actually the lack of pain. And I think we often think of pain and fear as a problem to be treated. But often rather, pain serves to warn us of real danger and damage. As Dr. Brand says, pain is not the enemy, but a loyal scout announcing the enemy. So, pain is very rarely without reason. Our bodies were created as very complex systems, and things do often go wrong. Maybe we just slept on our back wrong, or maybe we've strained the muscles in our legs. But in either case, our bodies are usually telling us to change something with pain. Maybe to rest and take it easy for a while. Working through our pain and just ignoring it isn't actually a sign of strength. It's actually a sign of unwillingness to listen to our body and what God is trying to tell us through that pain. Now, that's not to say we should take the day off work if we have a headache, but it is maybe a reminder that we should not just pop painkillers and keep on going. If we keep walking on a sprained ankle, for example, that will take that ankle longer to heal, and it might be more likely to be injured again in the future. And I think this is especially a problem in our modern world. Brand also says, and I quote, "As society gains the means to limit suffering, it loses the ability to cope with suffering itself." So we as a modern society don't really know anything other than painkillers. Now, knowing pain is important doesn't make it less painful, unfortunately, because our bodies aren't going to stop sending pain signals as soon as we realize that something is wrong. It's built into our biology and it's still there. However, Dr. Brand does give us some advice to deal with pain. He lists several things, but I'd like to pick out a few today, beginning with, surprisingly, gratitude. Like we heard last week, gratitude has a remarkable number of benefits for us, including significantly lowering our stress and anxiety. And it turns out stress and anxiety are two things that make our perception of pain worse. So if we resent the pain and feel bad for ourselves, our pain is likely going to feel worse. Our experience of pain will be worse. I'd like to quote again from the book here. Dr. Brand says, "Think of pain as a speech your body is delivering about a subject of vital importance to you. From the very first twinge, pause and listen to your body, and yes, try to be grateful. The body is using the language of pain because that's the most effective way to get your attention." He calls this approach befriending pain, taking what is ordinarily seen as an enemy and disarming it and welcoming it. Now, some of you might say, well, that's only a mind trick to help us deal with the fear and anxiety of experiencing pain. But that, of course, is exactly the point. Pain takes place in our head, and what calms our mind and our anxiety will help us deal with that pain. The second thing he mentions is listening to our body, and that can help transform how we think about pain as well. As he says, "If I regard my body with respect and wonder and appreciation, I will be far more inclined to behave in a way that sustains its health." Sometimes our pain comes from things we don't have any control over, whether that's a chronic disease or an accident, but oftentimes pain does come from more of a chronic dismissal of our body's messages. Probably few of us good, hardworking Anabaptists would like to take a day off or take it easy when our leg flares up or our back flares up, but oftentimes that may be actually exactly what we need, and a lifetime of just ignoring those signals does end up leaving us with a lot of pain in our older lives. Finally, and I think his last point here is most critical, he says that rather than isolating ourselves and trying to deal with our pain on our own, the single best thing we can do to prepare for pain is to surround ourselves with a loving community who will stand beside us when tragedy strikes. And unlike the rest of his advice that I've just read, this focuses on the group, not the individual. if we know that others are going to be around us and support us through painful times, we will be better able to handle that pain, the reality of it. And of course, this should remind us that we also need to be part of that community for other people. We need to be there and support them when they go through physical pain or emotional pain as well. Now, I have talked primarily about physical pain this morning, and I would like here at the end to talk a little bit more about the emotional and spiritual applications of this as well. I think just like God gives us warning signals in our physical bodies, he also gives us warning signals in our spiritual and emotional bodies as well. So perhaps the parallels are not exact here, but I think it's helpful to think about. A lot of times emotional pain and suffering can be a warning signal to us of things going wrong, either in our interpersonal relationships or our relationship with God as well. Now, those aren't always things we can change, unfortunately. And in that case, those are times where we really need our community to stand around us and stand with us. However, there are cases where it is something that we've done that we can change. If we're feeling particularly lonely, maybe it's because we've alienated ourselves from those around us. And so that should be a reminder that we really need that community and need that connection with others. And again, like I said, if that pain does come from the outside and it's not something we can personally change, then we need the community around us to stand with us and support us as we try to deal with it. So again, kind of in summary here, pain is not the enemy itself. Pain is the warning of the enemy. And so in our physical lives, I hope that you remember in the next few weeks not to just pop a painkiller and forget about it, but to stop and take a moment before you do to think about why you are experiencing pain. And it's probably okay to take the painkiller after that, but at least think about it rather than just ignoring it. And also in our spiritual lives, stop and think about why we are experiencing what we are and think about what God might try to be telling us through that pain. So, again, instead of just ignoring pain, stop, listen to it, be grateful for it, and then look for the community around us to help us make it through. Thank you.